And now, from the world's newest graffiti to the world's oldest, cave art. It's the subject of Werner Herzog's new film, Cave of Forgotten Dreams. Herzog is the most idiosyncratic and one of the most interesting major filmmakers working today. He's made big epic features like Fitzcarraldo and more recently Rescue Dawn with Christian Bale, but he's almost as well known for his peculiar and riveting documentaries like Grizzly Man. His new movie is also a documentary, but the wild animals in it are painted on cave walls.
In a forbidden recess of the cave, there's a footprint of an 8-year-old boy next to the footprint of a wolf. Did a hungry wolf stalk the boy? Or did they walk together as friends? Or were their tracks made thousands of years apart? We'll never know.
Cave of Forgotten Dreams chronicles the oldest paintings on Earth in 3D. For my money, the result may be the best use of 3D technology yet.
I was skeptical and I'm still skeptical about 3D. It's not the wisdom of all wisdoms. There are films that still should be in 2D. And the moment I set my foot into the cage, it was clear, yes, it had to be in 3D. It was imperative. This cave, which was discovered, contained paintings that were way, way, way earlier, more than twice as early as anything we had ever seen, and completely and utterly accomplished. I mean, great art. It's not like primitive children's sort of stuff. Completely and utterly accomplished.
And one of the things that one sees, partly because it's 3D and you talk about it, is that the surfaces and the contours of the stone are used in the art.
Yeah, there are wild bulges and rock pendants and niches, and the artists utilized it. For example, a bulge in the formation of the rock now is a bulging neck of a bison that charges you. So very, very interesting how they utilized the drama of the three dimensions.
The logistics beyond the 3D cameras and so forth of filming in this cave were extremely constrained, yeah?
Yes, sure. You have to understand the famous cave of Lascaux with the famous horses and wonderful paintings, which were done something like 14,000 years roughly back in time, had to be shut down for good because too many visitors were inside.
Right, almost 50 years ago they were shut
down.
Yes,
and, yeah. and all the breath, all the exhalations, all the vapors from human beings created a mold on the walls. So the Chauvet cave was left as a complete, perfect time capsule. And you must not leave, ever step off a 2-foot-wide metal walkway. You don't put a tripod down there, so you do not install a light. You do not touch anything, because right next to you, you see fairly fresh tracks of cave bears. But the cave bears became extinct some 20,000 years ago, and you still have the fresh tracks.
Amazing.
There. Yes.
A beautiful horse here, one of the most beautiful in the cave. And what is touching is that it looks as if it had been done yesterday. Look how fresh it looks with that technique.
The constraints, you couldn't go off this little metal walkway.
Yeah.
and 4 hours a day for 6 days, not much.
Yes,
time
that
at all.
Was, yeah. And only three persons with me.
Right.
And you see quite often the crew at work is in frame because there's no way to hide behind the camera.
Right.
You see us working and holding the lights.
With this film, as I was watching it, I thought of your Antarctic film, Encounters at the End of the World. I thought of Lessons of Darkness, where you shoot the oil well fires that the Saddam,
yes,
Hussein's troops lit at the end of the first Gulf War. Your documentaries often are of this Earth, as though you've come from some other planet to sort of look at this strange world with some greater objectivity or something.
Well, I think it's not great objectivity, but when you looked at Kuwait, when all the fires were still burning, every single oil well was burning, And I mean gigantic fires. They shoot up 300 feet into the air. They would roar like four jet planes taking off at the same time. In the film that I made, there's not a single shot, not one shot, where you could recognize our planet anymore. It was as if you were filming on a different planet.
And he opened the bottomless pit, and there arose a smoke out of the pit, as the smoke of a great furnace. And the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke. And in those days shall men seek death, and shall not find it, and shall desire to die, and death shall flee from them.
There was something cosmic about it, something way beyond the political events. And this is why the film never mentions Saddam Hussein, never mentions Iraq or Kuwait. It is as if we were witnessing something like a crime against creation itself, something way beyond politics.
Yeah. This film is, compared to many of your films, it seems to me, unambiguously full of uplift and amazement and kind of celebration of the human spirit.
Oh, yes.
I mean, there's very little of the, on the other hand, let me tell you something dark that you often do in your films.
Not that I'm seeking out a dark side in other films.
But there's plenty of darkness in the world.
Yes, and sometimes a darkness presents itself and becomes evident when you look at Grizzly Man, for example. Yes, wild nature is not something like Walt Disney would invent it.
Yes.
And a grizzly bear over 1,000 pounds, an animal that can decapitate you with one swipe of its paw, that runs as fast as a horse and can move 250 miles in 48 hours.
They're not little cute pennies.
They're not just fluffy and cute and friendly, and you don't sing to them. You don't love the bear. Respect the bear and respect its territory.
In Cave of Forgotten Dreams, one of the interesting things is that apparently no one lived here, right? It was some kind of art gallery, religious place, who knows? But there was not a domestic center.
No, it was not inhabited by human beings, although you have evidence of fires, but they were used not for cooking or warming yourself. They were used for illumination. We know that. Besides, the prehistoric entrance was fairly wide and large, so daylight would come in, but the paintings you would find deep, deep, deep into the recesses of the cave, where it was definitely dark day and night.
So it was a movie theater? With
almost,
with,
yes.
With flame making it dance.
Yes, and torches, moving torches that made them dance. We actually tried to recreate this effect a little bit, or we would move our lights and all of a sudden the shadow of a niche would move along with a light. And it gave a very strong sense of how images probably have been seen at that time. Dwarfed by these large chambers, illuminated by our wandering lights, sometimes we were overcome by a strange, irrational sensation, as if we were disturbing the Paleolithic people in their work. It felt like eyes upon us.
As you went down there and spent a week looking at these paintings, did one or more of them strike you as your favorites?
Yes, there are a couple, but maybe the most stunning for me are the lions. There's an ensemble of lions stalking something, and with an incredible intensity of gaze, they're all looking exactly at the same spot, and we don't see what they are stalking. So there's such a drama and such an intensity in these paintings. I've never experienced it anywhere in any painting.
That's interesting. That really does rise to the level of art.
Yeah, of course. Any idiot spending less than 120 seconds in front of these paintings would know this is great. This is very, very big, what we are seeing there. Whether it was understood as art for the painters 32,000 years ago, we do not know.
The painters of the cave seem to speak to us from a familiar
yet distant universe. But what we are seeing here is part of millions of spatial points.
When, I'm sure you've experienced this sometimes with your documentaries, when your narration comes up, because you have such a specific, recognizable voice and saying these sometimes very grand statements, there's laughter sometimes.
Yes, there's a humor in it, sure, yes.
You're entirely aware of that?
Of course, yes. And in many of my films, there's much more humor than you would ever anticipate. But when you see them with an audience, there's a lot of laughter.
Yes.
And I enjoy it. Finally, they notice.
Oh, that's great. One of your newer projects is something you call the Rogue Film School, which is a 4-day seminar that you run. How did that come about? And what takes place there?
It's not like a regular film school. I encourage everyone to learn how to pick a safety lock, how to forge a shooting permit. But that's only at the surface. But otherwise, it's very much about a way of life also. Of course, I also encourage everyone, read. If you don't read, you will never be a filmmaker, never be a real good one.
How interesting. So you have all these, the cult of Werner Herzog is
created. No, not the cult of Werner Herzog. I do not want to see any of clones of me.
Uh-huh.
No, it's a way of life. It's a way of creating your own cinema. It's demanding and not always rewarding. Face it. And there's no excuse today, because you can make a feature film today for $10,000. Just go out and work. And I tell them, don't work in an office. Go out and work as a bouncer in a sex club. Go there where there's pura vida, as the Mexicans would say. The
stuff of life. Yeah.
The rawness, the purity of life. That's where you have to be.
Werner Herzog, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Werner Herzog's new 3D documentary, his 28th film, is called Cave of Forgotten Dreams, and it comes out this weekend.
It's not my 28th film. Okay. Maybe you should say it again. It's at least my 60th.
Werner Herzog's new 3D documentary, his 60th film, perhaps, is called Cave of Forgotten Dreams, and it comes out this weekend.
I'm sorry, I never counted my films, but it must be over 60 by now.